Broadcasting across the United States, Canada, and around the world, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Your host for the program is Hank Hanegraaff, president of the Christian Research Institute. We're on the air because life and truth matter. For more information, resources, or to donate to CRI, call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. To start today's Bible Answer Man broadcast, here's your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you, Randy. In order to mine the Bible for all its wealth, it is so crucial to mine the Bible as literature. We have to pay close attention to form, figurative language, and even fantasy imagery. Remember, if you read the book of Revelation, you'll encounter an enormous red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns. Or you may encounter that beast that resembles a leopard with feet like a bear and mouth like a lion. And what is distinct about that kind of fantasy imagery is that they don't correspond to anything in the real world. However, though they are unreal, they provide a realistic means by which to ponder reality. If we don't understand how to read the Bible correctly, we're going to come up with all kinds of errors. When we see the New Jerusalem described, we're going to think that's what it looks like as opposed to that's what it is like. Or when we see our Lord described in Revelation walking amongst the 7 churches, we'll think, oh, that's what Jesus looks like. No, that's what Jesus is like. So mining the Bible for all its wealth is crucial. We must ever be mindful that though the Bible must be read as literature, it is not mere literature. Instead, the Scriptures were uniquely inspired by the Spirit, and thus we must fervently pray that the Spirit who inspired the biblical text illumines our minds to riches buried in the tapestry of that text. I mean, wow, what a wealth, what a mine of diamonds. Failing to comprehend those diamonds, however, we all too often settle for glass. A paltry substitute that can be so transformational. Again, mining the Bible for all its wealth is something that you and I are not suggested to do, but commanded to do, because it will enrich you in ways that you have seldom dreamt about. Again, I've written about this in various places, but one of the places I really give a lot of attention to this is in my book, Has God Spoken? And it is a book that not only demonstrates that the Bible is the infallible repository for redemptive revelation, it is the Word of God, but if that is so, what has the Bible said? What has God said to us? We need to learn the art and science of biblical interpretation. That book and any of my other books available in a personalized fashion for those who join the monthly Bible Answer Man support team. In other words, I'll personalize that book or any of my books to you, a family member or a friend, is my way of saying thank you for joining a monthly support team that is so foundational to everything we do at the Christian Research Institute. If you can join the monthly Bible Answer Man support team, it would be deeply appreciated. The resources used for God's glory and for the extension of His kingdom. You can join in a safe, secure fashion online at equip.org, or you can give me a call at 888-7000 and the letters CRI. You can also write me and let me know that you want to join the monthly Bible Answer Man support team and which book you'd like personalized at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. A lot of you hanging on. We'll go right to the phone callers. First up, we'll talk to Brian. He's in Marion, Arkansas, and he's listening on Bot Radio. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Mr. Hanegraaff. Thank you for your studies and for the answers that you provide.
You are welcome. It's my privilege.
I have a question and some information concerning this Conversations with God movement. I'm not sure if it's a cult or what. My children's mother, my ex-wife, is involved in this, but it seems to have worked its way into mainstream denominations or become part of some mainstream denominations or part of the theology of mainstream denominations. And just my limited understanding is that it's the ultimate home of selfism and making God in our image other than us trying to be made in God's image and justifying our wrongs. But I don't know much about it.
Well, I mean, what you do know about it is brilliantly stated in the prologue to your question. I mean, yeah, Neil Donald Walsh in his best-selling books, Conversations with God, very, very dangerous because his worldview is decidedly Eastern in the sense of reaffirming the kinds of concepts which are diametrically opposite of a biblical worldview. And therefore, he would affirm things like reincarnation. He would not only that, but claim that the Bible is not a source that is authoritative. He will say that the New Testament writers never saw Jesus Christ. I mean, this is absolutely incredible in that the New Testament writers themselves say such things as what John said, that which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked at, which our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. Or Peter, of course, saying, we did not follow cleverly invented stories, but we were eyewitnesses of his majesty. Not only eyewitnesses, but eyewitnesses who were willing to die for the notion that Jesus Christ was, in fact, God in human flesh. So, yeah, and you also alluded to this, but he says about Hitler that the mistakes Hitler made did no harm or damage to those whose deaths he caused. Those souls were released from their earthly bondage, he says. I mean, this is just absurd, dangerous kind of rhetoric. So again, this is not commensurate with a biblical worldview at all. It is distorted and dangerous.
Well, that's my understanding, again, from my limited knowledge, but it was used to glorify adultery in my family's case, basically. But it seems to have worked its way into some mainstream or part of thinking into mainstream churches, denominational large churches.
Yeah, well, there's no question about it. I mean, there are mainstream denominational churches that have demythologized the Bible, and therefore there is no such thing as resurrection anymore. There is no such thing as incarnation anymore. So they've denuded the Bible of the main and plain things, the very things that give us hope.
Of the gospel.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very, very kindly. I appreciate the information.
You got it, Brian. Thank you so much for your call. Let's go next to James. He's in Charlotte, North Carolina, listening on Sirius XM 131. Hi, James.
Hello, Hank. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Pleasure.
And thank you for what you do. Hank, I have a question from 2 Samuel, and I believe it's 6 and 19. I don't have the text before me, but this is when the Ark of the Covenant was returned to Jerusalem, and David danced before the people. And then I believe he had given to each one, as he blessed them, a piece of meat, a piece of bread. And in the King James, it says a flagon of wine. In the ESV and in the Amplified and other translations, I'm seeing a cake of raisins. My question comes from a point of accuracy, not as much. I have no qualms with the freedom we have in Christ as far as the wine is concerned. But it does come from the point of, was this put in by the people who wrote the King James, or was it omitted by the newer translations for specific reasons?
Well, I don't think it's an omission. It is a different way of rendering the Hebrew into the receptor language, which happens to be the English language. And here's what's going on in principle. The King James Version, which is a fantastic version, it was commissioned by King James I in 1604, and then it was completed in 1611, and it withstood the test of time. It's been a wonderful translation. It is artistic. It is very memorable in the way it's presented and so forth. So I love the King James Version. But what's happened over time is that there's been a great amount of discovery of manuscripts since 1604. And as a result of that, there are certain things that we find that should be changed, not only as a result of that, but also as a result of a progress in knowledge and understanding of the original biblical languages. For example, a classic case in point is also found in the same book in 1 Samuel. And there you have the word Pim. Well, in the 1600s, that word Pim was supposed by KJV translators to refer to a file that was used to sharpen tools. And as a result of archaeological discoveries in the 20th century, translators then discovered that Pim actually refers to the price charged for sharpening tools like axes and goads and so forth. So advances in the knowledge of ancient Greek have been extraordinarily helpful, just like advances in the understanding of Hebrew. And as a result of that, the modern translations make some changes. But it's not to obscure knowledge or it's not to be devious. It is simply to be consistent with the best manuscript evidence that is extant or available to us today. So you got three things that really are factors. Two of those I just mentioned. The other is the evolution of language.
Okay. Well, that's a very satisfactory answer. I just, as I stated, I know certain, I can't stand the denominational thing. We are a non-denominational church right there in Belmont near you. But, you know, they have an issue with anything referring to wine. And I didn't know if that it was cakes of raisin.
Well, it's not because of a theological bias that the new translations say cake of raisin. I mean, because if you read the whole of the new translations, there's ample evidence in the Bible that there's nothing wrong with drinking wine.
Exactly.
What the Bible has something against is becoming a wine bibber or a glutton. In fact, wine bibbing and gluttony are placed together as sins, one against the metaphysical aspect of our humanity, the other a sin against the physical aspect of our humanity. So there's nothing wrong with wine, and the Bible makes that clear. Wine is a blessing, but it can also be misused, leading to drunkenness or carousing, or even worse. So if you look at the Bible in its context, you see that you can't be one of those who drinks too much wine or gorges themselves on meat. For drunkards and gluttons become poor, and drowsiness ends up clothing them in rags. That's what Proverbs tells us. But wine is also extolled in the biblical text as a blessing.
I agree 100% with you in taking that approach. I do, lastly, I enjoy the new translations. I don't detest the King James. I do appreciate the grace of it, if you will,
yes,
what you said earlier. But I just find that the new translations, with the availability of all the technology and the information, the old scrolls, it just speaks a little more clearly to me. And this is someone who was saved at Jack Hudson's Church as a little boy at the north side.
Wow.
On North Tryon Street.
Wow.
Under the King James.
Wow.
So I'm so thankful for your answer. It does bring so much clarity. I was looking, we looked in the Strong's, we were looking for where there's no reference to that one particular phrase, flagon of wine, in the concordance.
Yeah. So. Well, one thing I would say, too, I mean, not that the concordance isn't helpful, it is, but you also have to realize sometimes what people do with a Strong's Concordance is they get this perception that the meaning of a word or phrase in one context is to be transported into another context, and that's not the case either. Context is always determinative. So words and phrases are not univocal, they're equivocal. They take on the meaning that the context allows them to have.
I was hoping it would tell us whether it was Hebrew or Greek, which would give us
yes.
a starting point to go
sure.
back
yeah.
to see the text. But thank you. You've been a blessing, and I thank you so very much for what you do. Proud to be in Charlotte with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your kind comments and also very informed comments. I also just want to elaborate quickly in the seconds before we go to break on the evolution of language. I mean, if you think of something like prevent in 1 Thessalonians 4:15, it meant to go before or precede. So obviously what was denotative became connotative, or leasing. It meant falsehood. We don't know that, and that's why the newer translations don't use the word leasing. They use what's denotative now, falsehood, so that we don't misunderstand what's going on in the biblical text. We're coming up to station break. We'll be back in just a few moments with more answers to your questions, so please don't touch that dial.
While just war theory is a useful guide in determining the morality of war between nation states, its value is limited when it comes to determining the warrant for launching a revolution. Are there biblical principles that can help us determine whether revolutions ranging from the American to the Iranian Revolution can be justified? The latest issue of the Christian Research Journal analyzes what justifies a legitimate revolution. Start your subscription today when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast will return in just a few moments. D.L. Moody once noted, "Where one man reads the Bible, 100 read you and me." That's a sobering thought, but one that could also encourage us. Because while most non-Christians today will never read the four Gospels, they will read a fifth Gospel, the lives of those who claim to be Christ followers. By living out the Gospel, we gain credibility. By verbalizing the Gospel, we provide clarity. And that's exactly why we recommend you to read Bobby Conway's new book, The Fifth Gospel. It will help you wrestle with the critical issues involved in living out your faith in front of a watching world. To receive your copy of The Fifth Gospel as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org.
Are you a Christian looking for a phenomenal Bible app? The Word of Promise Bible app may be exactly what you've been looking for. You'll experience the Bible like never before. This free app includes the entire New King James Bible text with powerful search capabilities. For example, you can look for a word like love, and every verse that includes love will appear. Also included is the entire 2-hour audio Gospel of John featuring world-renowned actors. This 2-hour audio Gospel of John is fully dramatized with sound effects, with an original music score, and is synchronized to the text so that as you hear this powerful audio theater, the text appears verse by verse. Receive your free Word of Promise Bible app today at equip.org.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. The nonprofit organization BioLogos, founded by Francis Collins, promotes the view that scientific consensus on neo-Darwinian evolution is fully correct, compatible with Christianity, and should be deferred to by non-experts, despite recent scientific discoveries undermining neo-Darwinism. Has such uncompromising commitment to Darwinian orthodoxy compromised BioLogos' commitment to Christian orthodoxy? Other topics include ostenification and what it portends. How does sanctification work? You say you want a revolution and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. Mahatma Gandhi was once asked how he felt about Christianity. His reply? He said he would seriously consider becoming a Christian if he ever met one. Interestingly, your non-Christian friends and associates might be saying exactly the same thing. They may never read the four Gospels, but they could be reading you as the fifth. To receive your copy of the fifth Gospel as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. Let's get back to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you, Randy, and we'll go right back to our phone callers. Next up is Megan, listening in Seattle, Washington on KCIS. Hi, Megan.
Hi. Thank you so much for your teachings. I like listening to you on the way home from work.
Thank you.
So my question is today, why does the devil tempt individual people, but not always individual for everybody? Like, why does he tempt certain people? Is it because they're lacking in something? Or because I had an experience, and I'm just wondering if, like, there's something about me that I need to work on.
Well, I think if you're being tempted, you are experiencing that which is common to all humanity. It isn't even our job to try to figure out whether we're being tempted by the world, the flesh, or the devil. What we ought to do is we ought to put on the full armor of God so that we can withstand testing and temptation by the devil. And then also recognize that in Ephesians chapter 6, Paul not only gives us the antidote to these kinds of temptations, but he's also starting out by telling us that we need to be strong in the Lord and in His mighty power, which is to say, we need to recognize that the power of God to protect is far greater than the power of Satan to pillage. So the prologue to putting on the full armor of God in Ephesians chapter 6 is to recognize the power of God to protect us if, in fact, we will put on the full armor of God so that we can withstand principalities and powers of darkness. But it is the lot of humanity to be tempted by the devil, to be tempted by the world, and to be tempted by the flesh.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You got it. And when I talk about the full armor of God, it is so important to recognize not only the word, but the meaning encapsulated in the word. For example, we are to put on the belt of truth. Well, what does that mean? Well, partly in an age in which internet fabrications travel halfway around the world before truth has had the chance to put its boots on, those words have an added urgency. Because as your waist is the center of your body, so truth is central to the full armor of God. Without it, the covering that protects you from the devil's schemes, well, it simply crumples to the ground and leaves you naked and vulnerable. Truth, like all other pieces of the armor, is in actuality an aspect of the nature of God Himself. And therefore, to put on the belt of truth is to put on Christ, for Christ is truth, and Christians are called to be bearers of truth. As Os Guinness once said, Christianity is not true because it works. That's pragmatism. It's not true because it feels right. That's subjectivism. It's not even true because it's my truth. That's relativism. It's true because it's anchored in the person and work of Jesus Christ. So the Christian faith is not true because it works. It works because it's true. It's not true because we experience it. We experience it deeply and gloriously because it is true. And it's not simply true for us, it's true for any who seek in order to find, because truth is true even if nobody believes it, and falsehood is false even if everyone believes it. That is why truth does not yield to opinion or fashion or numbers or office or even sincerity. It is simply true, and that is the end of it. The moment we drop the belt of truth, our view of reality becomes seriously skewed. Well, what I've just said about truth could be said about righteousness and the other pieces of the armor. It's critical that we not only know the word, but what is encapsulated in that word. And that is why I wrote a book called The Covering, God's Plan to Protect You from Evil. If you put on the full armor of God, you're invincible in spiritual warfare. If you do not, you are a guaranteed casualty. Let's go back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to T, listening in Memphis, Tennessee, by radio. Hi, T.
Hi, Hank. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure.
My question, Hank, is regarding Genesis 1 and 28, where God says, be fruitful and multiply. I'm married, and I suffer with infertility issues, but I believe in God's healing power. And to be honest with you, I've struggled with this for about 10 years now. My question is, and literally my question, it may sound funny, but if it is a commandment that God gave, how can I do it, which is to be fruitful and multiply, if I can't? That's the best way that I know how to put the question, because
sure.
It's been a big struggle for me, because I want to, you know, with all my heart, have children, my husband and I, but I haven't been successful.
Yeah, and you cannot do what you were not designed to do. I mean, you are created in a certain way, just as I was created in a certain way. You have a certain DNA, I have a certain DNA, and we're all created within the context of our humanity with imperfections, because we live in an imperfect world. We're going to one day be perfect. So the real issue is the attitude of your heart. And the attitude of your heart, as you have expressed it, is not only glorious, but it's beautiful and pleasing to the Lord. So I would be very comforted in that. And I think that what you're communicating is the imperative, and that is that children are viewed as a blessing from above rather than a burden or a blight. You can also look at it this way. I mean, there's always the possibility of adoption. I mean, we have had 9 natural children, and we have also adopted, and we find a great blessing in that. And you can imagine what's going to happen out of that. We're going to be fruitful and multiply even through that adoption, because the children will eventually get married and they will propagate and so forth. And so there's a lot of ways of being fruitful. But I mean, this is something that you have to do as a conscious decision before the Lord with your husband. It's not something that everyone is called to do. But what everyone is called to do is what you expressed in the prologue to the question. That is, have the heart that you've expressed.
Okay. Thank you so much. I can hear the sincerity in your voice that touches my heart, and that definitely helped me more than you know. Thank you.
You're welcome. And if I have touched your heart, let me tell you, you have touched my heart as well. God bless you, T. Let's go back to the phone lines, and we'll talk next to Peter, listening in Louisiana. Hi, Peter.
How you doing, Hank?
Good. How are you?
All right. I just called to tell you thanks, because I owe you and your staff for, like, you know, just changing my life as far as how I read the Bible. There was a point in time in my life I was looking into the prosperity teacher. You came out with the book Christianity in Crisis, and it just gave me a whole different view of how I look at it and read the scriptures. And I just want to thank you and your staff for that. And I'm forever in you all's debt.
Oh.
And I'm strongly, you know, convinced of that.
Wow.
But my question is, in the book of 3 John, when the word prosper is used, I hear a lot of the prosperity teachers translating that word to mean material possessions. At the same time, these are the same men trying to convince me that Jesus went to hell to pay the penalty for my sins.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, the NIV the ESV and the ASV use the word well. But most importantly than that, I need you to help me straighten me out if I'm wrong. The context of the book is the leader of the church is causing chaos amongst the believers. This is what John is writing about. So my question, why are these people able to do this and no one is looking? I mean, it's just like they absorb it like a sponge. I don't understand it. But I know a lot of it comes from not reading the scriptures and not studying the word of God for yourself. But I look further than that simply because I've been listening to you lately and you talk about that fifth gospel. And I just see it hard to believe that a fifth gospel can come from this. I mean, it isn't the gospel. So how can a fifth gospel come from
it? You know, the fifth gospel, though, is used in the sense of it's sort of used in an ironic sense, in a metaphorical sense. It's saying that, you know, there are only four gospels, but the fifth gospel is the one that people can see when they see a believer who has internalized the Word of God and who is a faithful witness to the resurrection of Jesus Christ, just like the gospel writers were faithful witnesses to the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. So that's the sense in which it's used. And the idea is that a lot of people in a secular culture won't read the Bible, but they do see you. And so the way in which fifth gospel is used is be a witness for Jesus Christ through the testimony of your life, the testimony of your love, and the testimony of your lips.
And I agree with you 100% because you said it better than I could. But the thing was, if you under the leadership of a totally different gospel, a totally different Jesus, how can my life, you know, be an example of what Christ is?
No, and you know,
you're getting that.
Yeah. Well, you're making a very good point. It can't be. You can only be a testimony if the Jesus Christ of the Bible dwells within you. And I love what you alluded to in terms of your question on 3 John 2, where John says, "Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospereth." Now, what's important is not only to read the words, but to understand the historical context. The Greek word translated prosper means to go well, just as you said. So you have correctly seen what the word means in its historical context. And this is the point. We have to take into consideration historical context. The opening remark in John's letter to Gaius is the standard form of greeting in a personal letter in antiquity. So to extend John's wish for Gaius to refer to material prosperity for all Christians of all times is totally foreign to the text. John neither intended that, nor could Gaius have so understood him to mean that. So, yeah, it's exactly what you have so correctly and beautifully said, Peter. It is a word that means to go well with someone, and it is a standard form of greeting in antiquity. I wish I could keep talking to you forever. You are very bright, and I just love how you have actually explained so many things in the prologue to your question. So, Peter, thank you for calling, for listening, for being a friend of the ministry, and may God richly use you, not by might nor by power, but by His Spirit to touch the lives of many in the years to come. We'll be right back in just a few moments with more answers to your questions.
There are five Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and the Christian. But most people never read the first four. So said Rodney Smith, a 19th century British evangelist who led passionate evangelical campaigns to countries like Australia, South Africa, and the United States. It's interesting to note that more than a century later, some things haven't changed. A great many people still don't read the four Gospels, but they may be reading you as a fifth. That's right, you. You may be the only Gospel some may ever read. Are we comfortable with what people will understand of the gospel if we're the only gospel they read? To benefit from insights into this critical question, don't miss Bobby Conway's new book, The Fifth Gospel. To receive your copy of The Fifth Gospel as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. Hank will be back right after this. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. With America's largest church and 1 billion impressions per month on Facebook and Twitter, Joel Osteen is the hip new personification of God talk in America. But behind the glowing self-affirmations, there lies a darker theological hue. Other topics include the new theistic evolutionist, biologos, and the rush to embrace the consensus. What is the connection between Sundays, the sacraments, and our resurrection? Why the followers of Jesus recognized him as divine, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org.
Are you a Christian looking for a phenomenal Bible app? The Word of Promise Bible app may be exactly what you've been looking for. You'll experience the Bible like never before. This free app includes the entire New King James Bible text with powerful search capabilities. For example, you can look for a word like love, and every verse that includes love will appear. Also, included is the entire 2-hour audio Gospel of John featuring world-renowned actors. This 2-hour audio Gospel of John is fully dramatized with sound effects, with an original music score, and is synchronized to the text so that as you hear this powerful audio theater, the text appears verse by verse. Receive your free Word of Promise Bible app today at equip.org.
Mahatma Gandhi once said, "Jesus is ideal and wonderful, but you Christians, you're not like him." If that's true, it would be a sobering indictment. After all, aren't we called to bear his image? Perhaps that's one of the reasons for the growing skepticism and even hostility towards Christianity today. Fewer and fewer people are reading the four Gospels, but they haven't ceased to read the fifth Gospel, the lives of those who claim to be Christ followers. Because our incarnation of the gospel is to be both visual and verbal, we commend you to Bobby Conway's new book, The Fifth Gospel. To receive your copy of The Fifth Gospel as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. Equip.org. The nonprofit organization BioLogos, founded by Francis Collins, promotes the view that scientific consensus on neo-Darwinian evolution is fully correct, compatible with Christianity, and should be deferred to by non-experts, despite recent scientific discoveries undermining neo-Darwinism. Has such uncompromising commitment to Darwinian orthodoxy compromised BioLogos' commitment to Christian orthodoxy? Find out in the current issue of the Christian Research Journal. Subscribe online today at equip.org. That's equip.org. Or call us at 888-7000-CRI. Once again, here's CRI President Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. And let's go right back to our phone callers. Next up is George, listening in Fayetteville, West Virginia. Hi, George.
Hey, Hank. How you doing?
Good, thank you.
Thank you for taking my call. I was visiting a church, and the teacher was talking about Jesus being our brother. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, where he says, "I'm not ashamed to be your brother." And I have trouble calling him brother. You know what I'm saying? It sort of went wrong with me. How do you see that?
Well, what I would do is I would look at how the Bible refers to us as the brothers of Jesus Christ. For example, if you look at Hebrews chapter 2, verses 10 and 11, in bringing many sons to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the author of their salvation perfect through suffering, both the one who makes men holy and those who are made holy are of the same family, and therefore Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers. So the text itself is very emphatic that the language is okay as long as you understand what is being meant by the language. For example, Jesus Christ is the Son of God by nature. So he is very God in the sense of ontology, essence, or nature. We are sons and daughters by adoption. So that distinction must always be kept clear.
Okay. All right, where he says in there also, he says your mother and your brothers out here, you know, desiring to see you. And
yes.
Jesus says, my mother and my brother are the ones that do my will.
Yes, 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 yes.
So, still don't get an answer for that. I mean, you know.
Well, I think you very wisely bring that text up as well. If we do the will of God, if we are participants of the kingdom, then we're sons and daughters by adoption. And therefore, Jesus would have no problem calling you brother, very much as Hebrews explains. I think it's also really important to realize that Jesus Christ is though our brother, is the Son of God and the Son of Man. He's one person with two natures, 100% human, 100% divine. So he is not divested of a single attribute of deity, but he does commiserate with us in our humanity. He voluntarily took on the form of a servant so he could identify with us. And therefore, we are not only brothers and sisters, but he is our elder brother. But again, the distinction is son by nature versus son by adoption, and that distinction must ever be clear in our minds.
Okay, I see that now. All right. I appreciate it. Enjoy listening to you.
Thanks, George. Back to the phone lines, James, Port Orange, Florida. Hi, James.
Hi, Hank. Thanks for taking my call. My question is about the Thessalonians 4:16.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when you know, the dead in Christ will be caught up first.
Yes.
And I'm just thinking, where are these people if they've been dead for say 10, 20 years or whatever, and then they're waiting, you know, to go to heaven or whatever, and whenever he was on the cross, he told the thief that today you will be with me. So why would he go that day and then everybody else has to wait or whatever? I don't know.
Well, good question, but here's what's going on. It's a very important thing to understand that if you die in the Lord, you're absent the body, present with the Lord. So your body goes back to the dust from whence it came, but the non-physical aspect of your humanity is in the presence of the Lord. This is very much what happened, as Jesus describes, to Lazarus, who was a beggar, died, and he was in the presence of the Lord. He was in Abraham's bosom or paradise, which are ways of saying he is experiencing the glory of being with God. Now, what happens when Jesus appears a second time is that we then will be resurrected, immortal, imperishable, incorruptible. We will be raised from the dead. Now, when I say raised from the dead, it doesn't mean that you're going to levitate. It means that you will be resurrected as Jesus Christ was resurrected. And this is what Paul is communicating in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. He's saying, brothers, we do not want you to be ignorant about those who fall asleep or grieve like the rest of men who have no hope. Why? Because we believe that Jesus died and rose again, and so we believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in him. So what happens at the end of time when Jesus appears a second time is those who have died will come back to life in physical bodies. The soul and the body will be reunited. That body will be resurrected, immortal, imperishable, incorruptible. And that's the hope of the believer.
Okay, so yeah, we're the ones that died are in Jesus, their souls. So they're not like waiting outside of heaven or wherever.
No, they're in the presence of God and they're awaiting the resurrection, yes.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Well, bless you. Thanks for calling, James. Good question. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Jake next in Texas, Sirius XM 131. Hi, Jake.
Hi, Hank. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Forgive me for breathing hard. I'm working, but I'm trying to come up with a method by which to help myself and others understand what instructions in the Old Testament still apply and which don't. And I'll give you an example. Some instructions are called commandments. Some are called statutes, some ordinances, and so on. And I often have kids who ask me, well, do I have to do this one thing? And it doesn't make any sense anymore. And what I try to help them understand is I give them a kind of a parallel between federal law, state law, city ordinances, and house rules. And I tell them it is true that some things in the Old Testament were for a certain time and place, but other things like commandments are eternal, and they're like the federal law. They apply to everyone all the time. Can you give me some guidance on laws versus statutes versus ordinances versus commandments and
well,
how to apply?
I think what you said was rather brilliant, actually, because, yeah, it's absolutely true that there are civil and ceremonial aspects of the law that no longer apply to us today. The civil aspect of the law was largely a function of a theocracy, God ruling directly over a people. The ceremonial aspects of the law were fulfilled in Christ. So we no longer participate in the sacrificial system or the dietary laws. Why? Because they are abrogated, because their purpose has reached its zenith in Jesus Christ. But the moral aspects of the law are principles that are never abrogated. In fact, they are not only necessary for maintaining order in society, but they're also very significant in revealing sin, the schoolmaster that ultimately drives us to Jesus Christ. Because if you think about the Sermon on the Mount as a classic case in point, here you have Jesus taking the law, the statutes, the principles, the precepts, the Mosaic law, and he is now extending it to its logical conclusion such that his hearers have to scratch their heads and say, if that's true, who then can be saved? And the answer is, with men this is impossible, but with God all things are possible because God himself fulfilled what we could never fulfill. And that's why Jesus said, I didn't come to abolish the law and the prophets, I came to fulfill them. And so the statutes, the civil and ceremonial aspects of the law, they have been fulfilled in Jesus Christ. So I would make the distinction which you alluded to in the prologue to the question between the civil aspect, the ceremonial aspect, and the moral aspect of the law.
All right. Thank you very much.
You got it. Thanks so much for your call. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Teresa, listening in Callaway, Nebraska, Bot Radio. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Hank. I was visiting a church, and they had a poster board of false prophets. The pastor was preaching on false prophets. And the only two pictures I recognized up there was Joel Osteen and Joyce Meyer. Do you feel like they are false prophets? I mean, I think Joel is, and Joyce, they said she is deviating from the truth, the biblical truth, here lately. So I wondered what your opinion was.
Well, I don't think it's lately. I think what they say is pretty much in tandem. In fact, sometimes if I look at their quotations, I don't know which is which unless I actually look at the source, because the words they use are very, very similar. For example, both Joyce and Joel will say that we are to call those things that are not as though they are. And if you actually go to the biblical text, you find out that they've just twisted the text. The text actually says, it's Romans 4:17, it is God, not we, who calls those things that are not as though they were. So they are text twisters. It's absolutely incredible. It's breathtaking, quite frankly, when you get a sense of how badly they distort the biblical text, even in tandem mocking a paralytic They both do it, and they do it in almost the exact same fashion, as though that paralytic could just simply get up and walk if, in fact, he had enough faith. Now, that faith that they're talking about is not a biblical kind of faith. It's a metaphysical, like New Thought metaphysics kind of faith, where faith is a force, words are the containers of the force, and through the force of faith, one creates their own reality. So yeah, the false teachings that they communicate on a consistent, ongoing basis are breathtaking. I often think that not even the Jehovah's Witnesses or the Mormons hold the scriptures in such utter disregard. They at least attempt to grapple with the biblical language. Osteen and Meyer do not so much as seriously consider the English text. And so, yeah, I think while I can't judge them, I can judge what they're teaching, and what they're teaching is not only decidedly unbiblical, but decidedly dangerous.
Okay, well, that I had never read or heard anything about Joel. I just seen his picture, so I wanted to check out with you and make sure that I was picking up the vibes that they were false prophets, that they were twisting it.
You know, I've actually written a book called The Osteenification of American Christianity, and I sort of coined that word osteenification only because he is the biggest of the bunch. Supposedly has a billion impressions on Facebook and Twitter combined per month. So he is a source of false teachings around the world. That's why I use that word osteenification. But he is indeed the de facto high priest of a new brand of Christianity that reduces God to a means to our ends, when in fact he is the end, and induces people to come to the master's table, not for the love of the master, but rather because of what is on the master's table. If you hang on, Teresa would be happy to send you a copy of The Osteenification of American Christianity. For everybody else listening in, the book is available on the web at equip.org. You can get a download of it. You can also get a CD. You can get them in six packs so that you can give them away. I think this is something that is such a blight on Christianity that people ought to be warned. There are people who are now within the body of Christ telling others what their itching ears want to hear. So as Paul warned the believers, we ought to warn them as well. The Osteenification of American Christianity, available on the web at equip.org. We are out of time for this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Thanks for tuning in. Look forward to seeing you next time with more of the show.
You've been listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. To learn more about Hank or the Christian Research Institute, just go to equip.org. Equip.org is a fountain of information and resources designed to help you defend the faith and grow in your knowledge of the truth. You can also stream the broadcast live or download archived broadcast. To talk with a resource consultant by phone, call 888-7000-CRI. Or you can write to us at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. D.L. Moody once noted, "Where one man reads the Bible, 100 read you and me." That's a sobering thought, but one that could also encourage us. Because while most non-Christians today will never read the four Gospels, they will read a fifth Gospel, the lives of those who claim to be Christ followers. By living out the Gospel, we gain credibility. By verbalizing the Gospel, we provide clarity. And that's exactly why we recommend you to read Bobby Conway's new book, The Fifth Gospel. It will help you wrestle with the critical issues involved in living out your faith in front of a watching world. To receive your copy of The Fifth Gospel as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org.
Are you a Christian looking for a phenomenal Bible app? The Word of Promise Bible app may be exactly what you've been looking for. You'll experience the Bible like never before. This free app includes the entire New King James Bible text with powerful search capabilities. For example, you can look for a word like love, and every verse that includes love will appear. Also included is the entire 2-hour audio gospel of John featuring world-renowned actors. This 2-hour audio gospel of John is fully dramatized with sound effects, with an original music score, and is synchronized to the text so that as you hear this powerful audio theater, the text appears verse by verse. Receive your free Word of Promise Bible app today at equip.org.